Unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning, and welcome to people just arriving today. Some of us have been sitting here for the past few days, studying together this ancient Zen text called the Sandokai, the merging of difference and unity, or the harmony of difference and equality, or the coincidence of opposites. Many other names we could use for this. And we've almost reached the end. Just a little bit more encouragement from the ancient ancestor Sherto, who wrote this treatise for us. It is about many things, but one of the main things this teaching is about is these two sides of our life. Sometimes we say the relative truth and the ultimate truth. And in this poem, because it's a poem, it's presented as lightness and darkness, these images. So in the light is the relative truth, where there's all these phenomena, all the things. That's the part of our life that we know about, is the light, where we can see and distinguish all these things. And then there's the dark aspect of our life, where we have no idea what's going on there. It's beyond our ideas, and yet it's half of our life. It's not really like there's fractions here, but it's one side. And we can't really say anything about the dark, although we've been trying to this week. As soon as we open our mouth about the dark, it becomes light, it becomes something we know and can talk about. And yet, this dark mystery of ultimate truth, this realm where our ideas don't reach, is here, right now. We're in the midst of it. But any ideas we have about it don't reach it. Oh, so we might wonder, well, so what's the point of that? If there's this realm where we'll never know anything about it, actually, our ideas will never reach it, so what? But it's this dark unknown where ideas don't reach, that's the reason that we can be free in the midst of all of this stuff of our life. Because it's the realm of freedom. In the realm of things and ideas and phenomena, we get bound up and stuck. But in this world of darkness, everything is free. Particularly, it's free from all our ideas, which are what actually bind us. And someone was brought up this point to me earlier today about, well, what's this word merging or harmony between these two sides of the relative conventional truth and the ultimate truth of emptiness where nothing's happening. How are they, isn't it not quite right to say they merge, because it still sounds like they're two different things? Or, and in the poem it keeps alternating between these images of like light and darkness, and we have these lines about, well, right in light there is darkness, but just don't meet the phenomena of the world in darkness, and right in darkness there is light, but don't see it as light. So they're integrated, the integration of the two. We can say merging and we can say harmony, but it's not quite right. And I think maybe I said something like, what about the not oneness and not two-ness of one and two? Neither the oneness nor the manyness of the one and many. Maybe, but these are just words. So luckily we have some Zen stories about this, which we've heard many of already, but this is one that I think many people have probably heard, but I think it demonstrates this principle quite perfectly, about the integration of these two sides, called Yunyan Sweeps the Ground. Right. Case 21 in the Book of Serenity. And a nice part about this too is that you might recall that Dao Wu, who's a character in the story, is a disciple of Sher To. And Yun Yan, I think, actually practiced with Sher To and later practiced with Sher To's disciple Yao Shan, who is the one who suddenly was okay with eyebrows raising and eyes blinking, or not. So Sher To's student was Yao Shan, and Yao Shan's student was Yun Yan, Un Gang Donjo in our lineage. So both of these characters, Yun Yan and Dao Wu, are students of Sher To, who wrote The Merging of Difference and Unity. So they're continuing to investigate this matter of these two sides. Oh, as Yun Yan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "Too busy." And Yun Yan said, "You should know there's one who's not busy." Right, so this, the world of sweeping and activity, doing the things of our life, looks busy. Looks like there's a lot going on. That's the realm of the light. And this, it was pointed out, you should know there's one who's not busy. There's darkness is pervading this whole situation of sweeping the ground right now. And Dao Wu said, if so, there's a second moon. This is the problem, right? We feel like, well, if you bring up this dark side now, there's one who's not busy. Now it sounds like there's two different things going on. How are we going to harmonize them? How are we going to merge the light and dark of busy and not busy? If so, there's a second moon. And why he used the image of moon? somewhat mysterious. We could say there's a second truth, but it occurred to me that just my mind is now thinking in terms of light and dark, right? So, you know, the busy sweeper is like the full bright moon, and then we have a new moon that's we actually can't see. Right? It's new moon. We look into the sky and it's this black sky, and there's a moon up there right in front of our vision, but it's like, you know, a crow landing on a black horse. We don't see the new moon, this fresh new moon of darkness, but we love the full moon, right? It's so bright, we can go out and watch it as it shifts into a half moon and quarter moon. So Yunyan was sweeping the ground, and Daowu said, "Too busy." Yunyan said, "You should know there's one who's not busy." Daowu said, "If so, there's a second moon." Yunyan held up the broom he was sweeping with and said, "Which moon is this?" So there's the merging of difference and unity. I think a wonderful capping demonstration of these two sides are not the slightest bit different. Which moon is this? And which moon is this? All of this is not on one side or the other ever. Daowu immediately stopped, let the matter rest. Which moon is this? Later, Xuan Sha commented, saying, "Indeed, this is the second moon." So, as soon as you say, which moon is this? You're already back into just one of the two, in a way. Like, we can't get around this issue of language and words. And so, Suzuki Roshi has this whole commentary, right, on the Sandokai, which I haven't really been mentioning, but I'll just read this one little excerpt. Just kind of in his conclusion, he says, "Some people say the Sandokai is not such a good poem because it's so philosophical." Now, you might have thought it was a good poem that wasn't so philosophical until I started talking about it. You didn't know it was about Huayan philosophy of the fourfold Dharma Dhatu, right? I'm sorry. It's not such a good poem because it's so philosophical. It may be so if you don't understand the background of Shuto's teaching, and if your mind does not penetrate through his words. We say to read the back of the paper, not just the printed characters, but the other side of the page. It's important for us to understand Shuto's, Sekito's, Sandokai in this way. That's the one part I'll mention from Suzuki Roshi. I meant reading the back of the page. And of course, it's right there in the poem too, right? The meaning is not in the words. No, that's the Jhumbir Samadhi. The, what does it say about words?
Hearing the words, you should understand the source.
Hearing the words, you should understand the source. So, reading the back of the page. Back of the page. So the dark is the realm of not knowing. Seems useless, and like we don't. Doesn't seem so helpful, and it seems like, what's the point? And yet, as I sometimes said, not knowing is most intimate. So, as you might recall, Dao Wu, the same one who said too busy, is also the one who said, what's the fundamental meaning of Buddha Dharma? And Sherto said, not to attain, not to know. And then he asked further, is there some turning point in going beyond? And Sherto said, the vast sky does not hinder the white clouds from flying. We talked about that yesterday, but I think it's one of my favorite stories, I feel, this week from Sherto, that the vast sky of darkness does not hinder the white clouds of light from flying. If it did, we couldn't actually survive. We couldn't walk into the room or out of the room. But because the vast sky of the ultimate is very kind, it lets us come into the room and go out of the room, and lets us talk about all this stuff in ways that actually can't defile it. Words seem to hinder and defile it, but they can't really. Our thoughts seem to hinder and defile our settled zazen, but they can't really. The vast sky does not hinder the white clouds from flying freely through our mind. Thoughts and words are not a problem. When seen against the background of the clear sky, not to attain, not to know. Right. So again, we have Dao Wu and Sherto, and Dao Wu said, "Who is it who has attained the essential principle of Cao Qi, of the sixth ancestor?" Sherto said, "The person who has comprehended Buddha Dharma." Dao Wu said, "Have you attained it?" Sherto said, "I haven't attained it." Dao Wu said, "Why haven't you attained it?" And Sherto said, "Because I can't comprehend Buddha Dharma." So, if you feel like after all this talk about the merging of difference and unity, and it seems like I don't really understand, and this issue about the conventional and ultimate truth being neither the same nor different and all that, if we comprehend that, that's not the one who attains the essential principle of Cao Qi. Because the fundamental principle is not attaining and not knowing. Another monk asked Sherto, "Why did the first ancestor come from the West?" Or we might translate as, "What's the ultimate meaning of living Buddha Dharma?" Sherto said, "Ask the temple pillar." It's so great to have a zenda with temple pillars. Huh? And the monk said, "I don't understand." And Sherto said, "I don't understand either." And yet the temple pillar holds up a reverse skylight. I just think it's one of the greatest features of Jikoji is it has reverse skylights, indented towers.
Light wells.
The temple pillar holds up the light well.
What?
And at night they turn into dark wells. The temple pillar holds up the light well and the dark well. What's the principle of this? Does anyone understand? Oh, what a relief. So this is serious now. We can't, like, if we don't get through this, we'll have to spend another day. We have a few more lines. If you don't understand the way right before you, how will you know the path as you walk? It just keeps going into this light and dark, these alternating sides and the integration throughout this. I never saw it this way before, but today I see it as those two lines are these two sides again, right? Maybe brought up more clearly actually in the next two lines, which is continuing with this theme. If you don't understand the way right before you, how will you know the path as you walk? Progress is not a matter of far or near, but if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. So that's actually, that couplet has the side of progress is not a matter of far or near. In the darkness, there's nowhere to go. There's no near or far. There's actually not progress. But if we're confused, which is in the realm of the light, where there's the myriad things, that's where we get confused. We don't ever get confused in the dark, strangely, right? We think, well, aren't we lost in the dark? But we're very safely not confused. We don't have to go anywhere in the dark. But when the light comes up, then, okay, now we have to get going and march onward. But it's confusing which way to go. The mountains and rivers seem to block the way. So it's bringing up this issue of these two sides now. At the end here, in terms of our practice, it looks like talking about our Zen practice. It could be applied to anything, but progress I take here to mean like progress for Zen practitioners going forward. But we could apply it to, you know, just progress in our life in any way. But in the dark, from the dark side, from the view of ultimate truth, where nothing's happening, progress is not a matter of far or near. But if we're confused, which in a way, as soon as we're just focused on the light, if we forget the darkness completely, we're inevitably confused to some extent. Even when we think we have it really together, I think it's a little bit confusing. Things don't quite work quite right. I mean, box and lid fit, but we have to duct tape the edges a little bit because they don't quite fit. They fit, but there's cracks and they warp. So mountains and rivers in the darkness actually don't block the way, and because there's nowhere to actually go. But in the light, they appear to suddenly be like huge obstacles that block the way from a certain perspective. You can also have mountains and rivers that are just beautiful, not blocking the way. But when we really get caught up in the world of the light, the phenomenal world, we get stuck. So finally, the final admonition is, I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, don't waste time, or I humbly say to those who study the mystery, don't waste time. And literally, again, he can't help this one last time getting into the light and dark, because time, I think the other translations bring this out more clearly, but it's, do not pass your days and nights in vain. But this Chinese way of writing day and night is actually light and dark. Mm. It's a little different characters, but that's literally light and shadow. So do not pass your light and shadow in vain. Right? Don't go through the darkness and the light in vain. Meaning like missing the light and the darkness right as we walk through it, them, through it. I humbly, respectfully urge you who study the dark mystery. Again, that's that another character for darkness. The dark mystery. Don't pass your days and nights in vain. What is passing days and nights in vain? What is wasting time? I could say that wasting time is just when we're not appreciating these two sides of the relative and the ultimate of light and darkness. If we get fixated on one or the other, and it's usually the light that we get fixated on, it's only Zen practitioners and others who get into this weird kind of stuff about dark mystery that can get stuck in the darkness, emptiness, sickness. And if we don't have that, then we don't have to worry about it. I think it's pretty hard, actually, to catch a case of emptiness, sickness. We sometimes feel like we might like to get sick in that way. Wouldn't it be a nice sickness? No? Why do you think not? Frightening. Well,
for me.
But I think the thing about the emptiness sickness is that from our light world of relative sickness, conventional sickness, it's frightening. But when I think part of the definition of emptiness sickness is that it's so unfrightening. It's so nice to not have to deal with the messiness of the relative world that people get stuck in, and the non-differentiation. I think people with emptiness sickness don't feel afraid, though there might be cases of maybe in kind of psychotic cases where people, not through practice but through just their own mind working, can get start to, like, their relative world can start to fall apart, and that could be frightening, and they, you know, get put in institutions and things for being, like, kind of stuck in this way, and it's not a nice situation. Right, but I think might feel nice at the beginning. Yeah, I think, which is when.
But it's the extended that makes it.
Yeah, and in a way, maybe that can end up being the cure for emptiness sickness, is because it starts to become not so nice. When the person's like, it's all totally like no problem, like no problem. And then that the person's friends have to be like, oh, I don't want to deal with this person anymore. Like, where did everybody go? And kind of like, it's not so nice anymore. I'm lonely. And then maybe like maybe I'm off somehow. I'm stuck somewhere, even though I know there's nowhere to be stuck. And then so the very pain and kind of discomfort of being stuck in one side, it could be the medicine to get out of it and come back to the world of phenomena. I don't know, maybe not always. We heard this story that Coben had to talk somebody out of it. Yeah.
I think that's awfully speculative, and it was Coben's concern, and the community's concern for this person. I'm not sure this person had the concern while it was there. There are many stories of Tibetan monks who mummified themselves in caves doing this because that was the end. That's all they wanted to do. I'm not sure they found it all frightening. Frightening for me is, fear for me is something that comes from imputing something to the future. I'm scaring myself to death. When I'm in the moment, I'm not afraid. And now what brings me to this thing here, if you don't understand the path as it meets your eyes, I want to put this out and see if it makes any harmony with what we're talking about. I have the sense, when we talk about darkness, while this node of consciousness does not fully contain darkness, darkness is bigger than this. Nevertheless, when the I don't know rises up and meets my eyes, when I let that happen, meets my eyes, then the path shows up. So it's about an internal disposition that allows the, I don't know, the darkness, the undifferentiated, that the alaya of all possibilities to come up and say, I am ready to present anything to you. And that I am ready to present anything to you is I don't know. And at that moment, the light comes up, and that's how the path becomes evident. And it doesn't come from getting an answer from a teacher. I think what's being said here is it comes from the personal experiment of allowing I don't know to arise to the eyes as we see. That's what I get from that.
And through our whole experience.
Yeah.
Of whole body-mind experience, I don't know, permeates, and then it...
But if I'm stuck looking at the mountains and saying, well, that's where I have to go, that's where I have to go, then there are obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
But when this just comes up, the mountains are just the mountains, the sky is just the sky.
Yeah. The way here, it's the Tao. So if you don't understand the way, we could take that as the integration of both the I don't know through a particular human experience, right?
Practice,
yeah. I don't know meets practice. We also, Dogen's classic thing, right, of practice and realization or verification are not two. We could also see as these two sides. Practice is what we think we're doing in the relative world, and the verification of the way is we don't know, actually. We just practice, and the relative practice of, you know, taking our seat and just living our life is right there seamlessly with the verification of the way. Inevitably, they're not two, which is Dogen's constantly pointing this out, that it's not like, well, you practice and then you will reach this abstract kind of verification later. They have to be completely not two. So if we don't understand this way where they're not two, how will you know the path as it meets your eyes as you walk? How will you know the, you know, how to just go forward and carry on.
So let me say one more thing. So what we see here is when we speak of difference in unity as being unmerged, and that our practice merges them, I think what's really happening is we are re-merging them. In our being stuck in the conventional as real, we diverge them. The true state is to re-merge them. They already are merged. But we don't see that. So we speak of white or dark. We speak of these separations.
So the but even to re-merge sounds
is
like...
is a practice. It's the practice of it's called disendarkenment in that sense. The practice of not diverging these things. And I think that's the path. Is our practice is not a state. It is an actual thing that we are actively doing when we're sitting. And so in this way, I think the practice and realization are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But again, that sounds like, it could sound like we're, this is something that we have to do, is these things have separated and we have to re-merge them. But they're already, like you said, they're already re-merged. So how can we say it in a way where...
Because we're practicing stop separation. We're practicing ending separating them.
That works. We're practicing ending
separating.
Which is non-doing. Which is why Shirto could say to Yaoshan, what is it that you're doing there? I'm actually not doing anything. Mm-hmm. It's already complete. Well, you say you're not doing. What is it that you're not doing? 10,000 sages don't know. Go ask the temple pillar.
I know yesterday and I guess other times there would be several different translations.
Mm.
And I found that they really illuminated each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see our translations on this last point. One of them is, if you overlook the way right before your eyes, how will you know the path beneath your feet? Advancing has nothing to do with near or far, yet delusion creates obstacles high and wide. Students of the mystery, I humbly urge you, don't waste a moment, night or day. That's nice, huh? That's from the Roaring Stream, Nelson Foster's translation. And now I have if you do not see the way, you do not see it. That's nice. That's a nice one. If you do not see the way, you do not see it, even as you walk on it. Because there's different characters for way and path here, but it looks like they're just combining it. If you don't see the way, you don't see it, even as you walk on it. When you walk the way, it's not near and it's not far. If you're deluded, you are mountains and rivers away from it. Which, you know, of course you're not really, but you seem to be. Mountains and rivers away from it. I respectfully say to those who wish to be enlightened, don't waste your time by night or day. Progress isn't measured by near or far. But if you get lost, mountains and rivers will separate you. I humbly say to students of this profound teaching, don't waste time. We have this issue of at each moment it's this, both these sides and yet carried on throughout time. And we have this limited, short little life span where we seem to be dwelling in the world of phenomena with all its immense complexity. And meanwhile, the days and nights are passing. And how do we not waste this? I don't think it's a matter of, like, we're doing the wrong things. In its core thing, it's not a matter of exactly what we're doing. It can't be, right? Because from this merging of difference and unity, it's like everything equally expresses Buddha's mind. So it's not like, oh, this activity is a waste of time. I don't think that's what this means. No activity needs to be a waste of time. It's just in the middle of any activity, can we appreciate these two sides, particularly the dark mystery side. I think we often appreciate, or, you know, in pleasant or unpleasant ways, we appreciate the world of phenomena. But the world of principle is, even though it's pervading everything, it's so easy to take for granted. I think this is why something like this may be why most people would say they come to a Zen sesshin. It's like, or like, our phenomenal world is going along, good or bad, it's going along, but like, we want to get more in touch with the side that's actually not going along, one way or the other, good or bad. One final poem to close. Shurto, we have very little of his record. You probably heard almost all of his stories by now over this week. And of course, he's maybe most known for the Sando Kai, but he wrote this other poem maybe later in his life that is not as well known, but it's a poem. And maybe it's because people said to him, that Sando Kai thing, it's too philosophical. It's not such a good poem. You're trying to make too much of a point about the dialectics of dependent arising and emptiness. And can you write us another kind of Zen poem, more straightforward? So he wrote this poem called Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, or Song of the Grass Hut. And the So An Ka. So now, after being so immersed in the Sando Kai this week, see if you can hear the same principles in this talk about a hut, a grass hut. Which may be his own, Shurto's own body, his own body-mind experience, or what if the grass hut is this mysterious coincidence of opposites? It's the light and dark, inseparable, in the form of a simple grass hut. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. Appropriate for today. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, she doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A Mahayana bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? At the end of the eon. Perishable or not, the original master is present. Not dwelling south or north, east or west, firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A bright window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting, with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instructions. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. We dedicate any merit collected and gathered through this Dharma assembly to the perfect freedom and joy of all living beings. May they not give up and live in this hut comfortably, stretching out their legs as they wish. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Thank you all for your great effort, enthusiasm, upright sitting, and patience during this session.